Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon for Friday, March 14th, year 2014. Jeff Bamke here. Today on the show we'll get an update on tonight's sound and motion performance by the Wooshjane Dance Group. We'll hear an audio profile about M.K. McNaughton produced by Scott Burton. We'll talk with Sammy Burrows about it this weekend's tribute to Tom Waits at the Gold Town. Kathy Connor, this week's featured speaker at the Fireside Lecture at the Mindanao Glacier Visitor Center, will be here to talk about ancient trees. And we'll talk to Robert Cohen about next Wednesday's KRNN Spotlight Concert, tribute to Blue Note Records. That Writer's Almanac Bird Note Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, rain and snow showers in the evening. Forecast for Saturday, a chance of snow in the morning.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A memorial is being held for Madison Wallace and Lyle Eagletail. A year ago, the non-native teen and Lakota man died in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, as they attempted a rescue. Jim Kent reports.
Laura Wallace dropped off her children at Falls Park, a favorite family spot, for the brief time it would take to run an errand. Her oldest daughter, 16-year-old Madison, was left in charge of four younger siblings. Laura never saw Madison alive again. Lyle Eagletail, a stranger to the Wallace family, saw Madison struggling in the Big Sioux River, searching for her brother, who she thought had fallen in. Lyle jumped in to help her. Other people gathered to assist Lyle in pulling Madison out, but the current was too strong, and within a few minutes both Madison and Lyle were gone. As for the courage shown by Lyle Eagletail, Laura Wallace says she's still overwhelmed.
He didn't hesitate to come in and offer to help, and we're really sorry that he didn't make it.
Lakota author Dana Lonehill says the incident has left an indelible mark on her.
They didn't know each other, but they knew what they had to do, and that's the human side. That's for the better of all of us. I will never let them be forgotten.
Lonehill helped organize tonight's memorial dinner. The theme is Warriors See No Color, in recognition of Lyle Eagletail's selfless act to help another human being. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Now, for part two of four stories we're featuring about some of this year's inductees into Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. Lori Townsend has more.
The name Katie John is synonymous with subsistence fishing rights in Alaska. An Athabascan from the Otna region, Katie John was born in a fish camp in 1915. She learned to live off the land from her mother and grandmother and learned to speak English at age 14. She married Mantasta traditional chief Fred John Sr. at 16, and together they raised 14 children and 6 foster children. Granddaughter Catherine Martin accepted the award on her behalf, saying her grandmother's death at 97 on May 31, 2013 was no small coincidence.
If you are from the Otna region or familiar with state subsistence fishing regulations, then you know that Otna people turned their fish wheels on at midnight on May 31st, which starts the beginning of our fishing season.
Katie John didn't learn to read or write English, but Martin says her legal efforts on behalf of Native people resulted in an honorary law degree from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in May 2011.
She is a symbol of Alaska Native subsistence rights. It is an honor to speak regarding her legacy. Our family is touched with the statewide support, recognition, and love for Katie John.
An effort is underway to declare May 31st Katie John Day in Alaska. In Anchorage, I'm Lori Townsend.
National Native HIV/AIDS Awareness Day is March 20th. Many Native communities and health agencies participate in the national event to raise awareness about the disease. Isidore Bonney is an advocate and AIDS survivor. He says there's still much stigma in Indian country.
Stigma prevents people from getting tested, prevents people from accessing the care that they need. It stops people who are positive from going through the process of acceptance.
Bonnie says after more than a decade of living with the disease, it's important to talk about it. He says it doesn't have to be a death sentence. Health professionals encourage testing and education. Today we remember Alaska Native leader Judson Brown, who was born on this day in 1912. The Tlingit man was a public servant and career fisherman. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO-FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Colleen James, one of the people involved in the Wooshtaheen dance group, which is performing tonight at 7 o'clock at the University of Alaska Southeast as part of their Sound and Motion series. Colleen, thank you very much for being on the station with us today.
Gunnathich.
So tell us about the dance group, please. How did you get started?
We started back in 2003 in the spring, probably about February. We were putting on, with a group of people from the community, we were putting on dance workshops up at UAS. And on our last workshop, several of the regular attendees had asked Lyle if he would consider starting a dance group. He didn't take the invitation lightly. He had to think about it because we're very aware of all the beautiful, talented dance groups already here in Juneau. And then both he and I grew up in our communities with our own dance groups that we were part of. And so thinking long and hard and consulting with some of the elders, he decided that it would be okay to start a dance group. And Nora Dauenhauer was the one who helped name us. So,
tell me about the name, please.
Wooshtaheen translates to working together or pulling together. And our dance group has many tribal nations represented in the membership. So,
and how many people are in the group?
We have about 40 dancers active right now. About celebration time, we blow up to about 100.
What do you do to prepare a dance for public presentation? I imagine it's different when you're doing it for yourselves or for a group of natives in one.
It's different because the dance group comes together and performs for various presentations. Like tonight, we've been preparing for the Alaska Native Studies Conference, And so there are different performances that our dancers are familiar with. There's the traditional protocol type performances where the dancers go back to their communities and they participate in kuiks or gatherings that celebrate memories of deceased or passed on loved ones. And the performance that we're doing tonight is nothing like that. Tonight's performance is it's an experience of Southeast. You'll hear us singing a couple of songs that we've composed ourselves and then a couple of other clan songs that we have permission to share with public performances. So,
are these dances difficult to choreograph? I imagine you've been doing them all your life, but for a public presentation?
You know what? Because it's hard to choreograph if you don't know the language. And my husband and I are learning the language, the Tlingit language, and so my husband's a lot further along than I am. He's one of the faculty at UAS and then one of the teachers for the school district. It makes it a little easier to do the hand motions and choreographing to our songs if you know what the songs translate to. So it doesn't have to be hard. Makes it a little easier if you're familiar with the language. But because we do a lot of practice, we do at least once a week, about 2 hours a week. we have some good time in with each other, so learning together.
What does an average dance spectator need to know, I guess, to enjoy the performance at its fullest?
Well, the beautiful part about most of the dance groups here in the community is that we share history. We share, we'll explain where the songs come from, who composed them. So it's kind of a history lesson when you come and watch any of the dance groups perform. You really just need to come and enjoy yourselves. We'll guide you, and anyone who would love to join us tonight, we'll guide you through our performance by talking about the regalia that we're wearing, the significance of the eagle or the raven crest that we wear on our regalia. We'll talk about the hand motions to the songs. We'll do translation for the audience. And then we'll put on a great show, hopefully.
Tell me more about the performance tonight.
Okay, so we were invited by UAS to perform at the second annual Alaska Native Studies Conference. And so tonight we're performing for the pre-conference as part of the Sound and Motion series. We'll be in the Egan 112 Lecture Hall starting at 7 o'clock is our performance, and we will take people through not just a dance performance, but also how songs are put together, and hopefully have enough time left over with the audience to do some questions and answers. You want to get there early to get some good parking. We have a lot of wonderful visitors from out of town attending our conference, so should be good.
What else can you tell me about the conference?
The Alaska Native Studies Conference is a two-day conference. It starts at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. The check-in starts at our cafeteria and registration. And then 9 o'clock kicks off our agenda, and we have some wonderful speakers coming in from out of town for both opening the conference both Saturday and Sunday. And then in the afternoon, we have wonderful breakout sessions. We have faculty from around the states coming in to share research that they've done on language, anthropology, you name it. We have a lot of fabulous sessions. We'll have information stationed at the Egan classroom wing, on the second floor, closest to the library. excuse me. We'll also have a Northwest Coast Native Art Market happening simultaneously in the hallway. So as people are going between sessions, they have an opportunity to check out some of our beautiful artwork from all around Southeast.
And understand there's some craft demonstrations going on.
Right now over at the Jack, we have our phenomenal Raven's Tail and Chilcat weavers demonstrating their craft. We have wonderful public presentations going on, and that goes until 5 o'clock today.
If people need more information, they could just contact the university?
Absolutely.
Colleen James, thank you so much for coming down to the station and talking about the Mushtaqin Dance Group, which is performing tonight. 7 o'clock is part of the Sound and Motion series and also part of the conference.
Free event tonight at 7 o'clock.
Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
We would love to see everybody at our campus.
All right, Colleen, thank you very much for coming by.
Ganesh.
Anne Hannah-Gnaughton is a Juneau visual and teaching artist who works in charcoal, oil, and sculpture. Her current show, Secrets, is up at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. The show explores emotional energy of secrets in individuals and includes both written material and charcoal portraits. KTLO's Scott Burton produced a video that features McNaughton and the show.
My name is M.K. McNaughton. I'm a visual and teaching artist in Juneau. I have a studio called Sketch Studio. I also work part-time as the executive director of the Alaska Arts Education Consortium. I have been enjoying charcoal drawing and oil painting, and making things out of junk seems to happen in my studio as well, as part of every project, so 3D sculptural pieces. This show is called Secrets, and I have been wanting to do this show for a couple of years. They are pictures of people talking about the emotional energy of secrets. I met with people and interviewed them. Then I took a couple photos and I told them that I would come back to them and let them proof what I'd written. I enjoyed this drawing because I was working hard on trying to not be too tight with my drawing and incorporate gesture, different texture. As pushing myself as an artist, I'm working on that, not trying to make sure all the lines don't go the same direction and everything's completely even. So Little Mikey's one of my favorites. I feel like I managed to get some direction and different texture going there, and his face just made it easy for me. In some ways, I struggled with this drawing because I obviously didn't really have a brick wall on his shoulders. So I do better when I'm drawing from what I see rather than in my imagination. But I felt like putting the wall was important. Kevin said that I like to talk about my mother's death because if I don't, it's like a brick wall holding my shoulders down. When I was 8 years old, my mother was shot in Anchorage in a gang shooting. She died in my arms with 15 wounds from an AK-47. That's pretty much it. Holding on, weighing you down. When you do portraits, people are looking for a flattering, happy, nice picture, but the show isn't really about that. So I wanted to honor people. I didn't want the pictures to be unflattering, but I wanted them to be real and I wanted I wanted people to share intensity or darkness. And a couple people have talked about Ryan's too and said he's such a happy-go-lucky guy, but he looks so intense, and that's what he talks about in his portrait, that he a friend of his nailed it, he said, and was like, why are you so happy all the time? There must be something really deep and dark in you. And Ryan said, that's it. I balance that out. I actively seek to believe in myself. And so he's portraying a different side of himself in the portrait than what you usually see in everyday life.
Scott Burton produced that profile of artist M.K. McNaughton. You can see the video by going to ktoo.org. Time is 3:17. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm your host for today. Tonight at the Minnemonk Glacier Visitor Center, there's the topic, Old Wood, What the Ancient Trees Tell Us, presented by Kathy Connor, geologist and professor at the University of Alaska Southeast. Discovered in 2011 in the Minnemonk Glacier Ice Cave, the 1 to 2,000-year-old trees were buried under the advancing glacier and then emerged as the glacier receded. Kathy, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jeff.
So is this an exciting find?
I always think any find we find in the Mendenhall Valley is exciting. I'm going to talk tonight about that find and other finds and try and set it in context so people can judge for themselves if it's totally dazzling or decently dazzling.
You're a geologist. At what point do you call in helpers from like archaeologists and biologists to talk about what you've discovered?
For this study, I called in my good buddy Brian Buma, who is a forest ecologist and a new professor at UAS, and he was extraordinarily helpful in helping me figure out what kind of wood it was.
What does this discovery tell us?
It mostly tells us that Mendenhall Glacier was advancing a couple thousand years ago into about 1,500 years ago, and now it's kind of melting away again. So glacier is pretty dynamic.
And how did you discover it?
David Jobe was hiking around the glacier and discovered, this is actually a 2012 ice cave, so not the ice cave everyone's been hiking to lately, and he told Roman Matika, who gathered up a group of us at UAS, Mike Heckers and a couple of our students, and we went out 2 years ago and were able to look it over and get some samples.
How often are trees like this discovered? Is this just the tip of the iceberg?
There's a lot of icebergs still forming, although the ice front terminus is shrinking, and I'll talk a little bit about Mendenhall Glacier updates for those who pay attention to those. But a lot of trees are coming out of the wood, as are a lot of human-altered trees. A lot of archaeology is coming out of snowfields and glaciers that are melting, so it's an interesting time to be paying attention to wood stories.
So the warming weather is not a good time to be hiking on the lake at this stage.
No, I think last Saturday was kind of the last day to really do it without, you know, water skis.
I saw a note from Lori Ferguson Craig at the Glacier Visitor Center that she just missed seeing the glacier calf.
Yes, I saw the photo of that from yesterday. I'm glad that I was out there last Saturday, and I'm glad I did not see any calving. That would have been really alarming.
Do you ever get scared when you're out there in a ton of ice?
Often. I just, you know, the glacier is so subdued from what it used to be, but nonetheless, it hasn't lost its power, so you really do have to pay attention. I also wanted to mention, I hadn't known this before, but you're the voice of the Glacier Erratic. I hadn't known this before. This is pretty cool stuff.
I'm sure the people at the Visitor Center will think of me. What are the tools of a geologist?
Mostly brain, but depending on what sort of earth material you're looking at, it can be geophysical instruments that are looking at things that aren't at the surface, maybe, you know, beaming some kind of energy, seismic energy or magnetic energy, trying to, you know, see what records might be at depth. It might be bashing on a rock with a rock hammer to get a fresh face to look at. It might be a shovel to dig through old soils to find old wood. It might be more along the lines of an archaeologist, you know, more gentle little trowels and toothbrushes. Just kind of depends on what you're after, what story you're trying to get. Possibly ice axes. Those come into play now and again.
At what point does a tree become a fossil?
Ooh, well, the wood that's coming out from under the Mendenhall wouldn't be considered fossil wood yet. It's still cellulose. It hasn't transformed into lithic material, so it'd have to be, you know, petrified to, I think, officially qualify.
So you're giving two lectures tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, 6:30 and 8 p.m.?
That's correct.
Give us a preview, if you could, please.
Well, I'm going to try and pull together, as I said, not only the Mendenhall wood story, but also talk a bit about other stories of old wood throughout Southeast to try and set it in context a little bit. We're going to time travel probably back to time before ice. We'll bring on the ice. We'll get rid of the ice, and we'll bring it back again. So a little bit of climatic do-si-do. I'm also going to highlight some of the work of different colleagues I've gotten to hang out with over the years and illustrate some of that. Mention a little bit about what the Mendenhall Glacier itself has been up to the last 10 years, kind of what our trends are, what our glaciologists have been finding, and maybe top it off with what will happen next.
Now, this tree has been described as being 1,000 or 2,000 years old. That's not a day and a half.
No, it's getting up there. It's getting respectably old.
Tell you how it got to where it is.
Well, it was growing there, and then this rude glacier just kind of rolled over the top of it, you know. But it was kind of a stand-your-ground set of trees, and so they're still there. They didn't get totally eradicated.
But they're not. They've frozen in time, it seems like.
Somewhat, although they really are thawing. They're pretty soft. You know, they aren't icy or lithified. As I say, they're still, you know, the wood, you can see the rings and still recognize them as trees.
What other things do they tell us?
Oh, they tell us a lot about how ecology has changed over time. Along with trees, there's also pollen in a lot of records, so a lot of what we know about forest recovery after the last glacial maximum when there was ice from Seattle to New Jersey and all over Southeast comes from pollen records and high elevation lakes or lakes that were offshore even on the continental shelf.
What do you do with the trees once you've finished looking at? Do you sell them as souvenirs?
No, I'll have to work on some tree jewelry or something that people might enjoy utilizing, maybe some nice walking sticks or something.
All right, Kathy Connor, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I don't think so, but I really appreciate you asking all these great questions.
I appreciate you coming down the station and answering them.
Thank you.
Rhythm of falling to take out trees, take out wildlife at a rate of a species every single day. Take out people who lived with us for 100,000 years. Inject 1 billion burgers worth of beef. Grain eaters. Methane dispensers. Light, ancient refuse of stars, speak of a drowning. But this is something other. Busy monster eats dark holes in the spirit world, where wild things have to go to disappear forever.
I'm 326 and 327, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Sammy Burrows, who's going to be performing Saturday and Sunday night at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater, a tribute to Tom Waits, accompanied by several local musicians, and he's going to be here in the studio.
Yes, sir. Live music.
So we're going to start the show with a little bit of Sammy live.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you for having me, Jeff. It's really good to see you, buddy. It's really nice to be home. This is a song off our Devil's Club, our new EP. This is the opening track.
Thank you. gotta move out of Chicago, baby. Come on. Hey, babe. Yeah. And never look back. Move out to the country, baby. Hey, baby. Buy ourselves a little shack on shack. No one around, no one around to see. No one but you, baby, and I know you're down with me. And well, it will never come back. We'll never come back. We'll never come back. I never want, baby. Want to come back.
For those of you watching in the studio here on the internet, if you look at your monitor, you'll see a picture that we have from a long time ago of Sammy being born with a guitar in his hand. Sammy, thank you for coming.
It's quite painful for Mom, but yes, it's true.
So, tribute to Tom Waits at the Golden Nickelodeon this weekend, Saturday at 7 and 9 p.m., and Sunday at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Yes, sir.
About your background.
About my background? Oh, well, you know, I've been living in Alaska since about 1990. Grew up in Ketchikan down there, running around, learning how to play guitar, going to middle school and high school. Moved up to Juneau in, like, 2001. And been living up here for like 10 years or so, learning how to play guitar even more, and meeting folks like Scott Burton over here, and running around playing and with C. Scott Fry and all those guys, just kind of playing the Alaskan and doing the Juneau thing and figuring out how to make music work for me, you know.
Works very well so far.
It's been working good. It's been working better and better all the time, actually. It keeps getting better.
So you did a tribute to Tom Waits. What does Tom Waits mean to you, and what has he contributed to music today?
Oh, goodness. Well, I remember the first time I ever saw Tom Waits. I was on TV, and I was watching IFC, Independent Film Channel. I was probably like eighth grade or something, and his show Big Time came on. It's that one movie he made where it was in the mid-'80s, and it just scared me. I didn't understand it at all. It was just a crazy character on TV, and it was just a crazy voice. It sounded like he was chewing on rusty nails and broken glass. And I didn't understand it at all, and it scared me, but I always remembered it. And then when I rediscovered him through a friend of mine, Jerry, he played me Jesus is Gonna Be Here off Bone Machine. And I just fell in love with it and remembered that I'd seen him on TV before, and just the whole thing just blew up from there for me, and I just... learned. I mean, I just listened to Bone Machine, and I got a couple other records, and... just loved it. Some of it I didn't like very much at all. I mean, it took me, and it takes a lot of Tom Waits fans sometimes, years to hear a certain song. Like, I don't really like that one, but then all of a sudden, 3 years later, it's your favorite one. And that's one of the things I love about him so much, is that he's just all over the map. He's very rootsy, of course, but he's just so surreal, too, and just arty as well, too. Some of it takes a while to get. He's beautiful. I think his voice is beautiful, and the way he uses it is amazing. He means a lot to me. I celebrate the whole catalog. I just like him a whole lot. And his guitar players and choices of musicians, it's just, yeah, it's really good stuff.
He's a poet and a musician.
Poet and musician. He got married in the early 80s to Kathleen Brennan, and ever since then, that's when his shift changed from, like, you know, his early jazzy down-the-alley stuff to swordfish trombones. And all that surrealistic kind of stuff. And they write together as a team, that husband and wife thing. I don't hear about that very often either, so that intrigues me as well. And
if people aren't familiar with maybe they're familiar with the name Tom Waits, but what kind of songs has he written that people that are involved in our popular culture?
Oh, well, you know, his songs have been covered by everybody. The Eagles were like the first to do like Old 55. I believe they did a cover of that. Rod Stewart did a version of Downtown Train. God, all kinds of folks. You know, what's that actress's name? The really attractive one. Goodness gracious. She was in Lost in Translation. Scarlett Johansson. She did a whole Tom Waits cover record herself, you know, and for somebody that I've never heard them play music to be inspired to do a whole record of Tom Waits songs, I mean, that just, you know, obviously Tom Waits speaks to all kinds of people. It's just really intelligent lyrics and great stuff.
Concert on Saturday and Sunday involving a few local musicians yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm lucky enough to have been in contact with, like, Rob Cohen and Chris Frary, Dale McFarlane, Magic Mike James on harmonica and oboe and Junkyard Equipment, because you need some of that for Tom Waits stuff. You know, Keith Giles is doing sound. Got Doug Bridges on saxophone and Mike Busey on the trombone. And then myself, you know, singing, doing the singing duties for Tom and playing guitar. And we're playing stuff from the entire spectrum of the career, from like the first records to the very newest record as well. And it's something I'm really excited about. I mean, I've always loved to perform Tom Waits songs, but to get a chance to really sit down in a rehearsal space and work out some of those kind of eclectic tunes has been real, you know, real fun for me. You know, and to have such aces, musician-wise, to come in and help me chart the stuff out too, you know, has been a lot of fun. And we're raring to go. It's going to be quite a good show. I'm pretty excited. And my sister, Amanda Filori, is doing all the lighting as well. And so we're going to have, try to make it as theatrical as possible. And it's in the theater, in the Gold Town Theater, so.
And you're coming by your band, Devil's Club?
Oh, yeah, Devil's Club. I mean, it's still going strong. We just finished an EP, and hopefully we'll have it out here pretty soon. Betsy Sims of Studio A recorded it, and David Pritchard mixed it down there in Hawaii, and Betsy's contact, David Torrey, I think he's in Pennsylvania, mastered the thing. And it's all done, and Ray Troll's doing the cover art, and he helped us with some T-shirts and stuff, too. So it's really nice to have all that Alaska superstar, like, backup support. It feels really good for me. And it'll be out hopefully in the spring. It's still a matter of money at this point, and just fundraising and saving my pesos as much as I can.
And speaking about money, door tickets today are $15 in advance, $20 at the door, and they can be purchased online.
Yeah, they can at brownpapertickets.com. It is through the Gold Town Nickelodeon website as well. And they're $15 in online and $20 at the door.
Gold Town Nickelodeon, that's where it's...
Colette Costa and those guys show their movies, and wonderful movies, too. It's a wonderful space.
Space Trucker Bruce is preparing to
Space Trucker Bruce! Yeah, I'm excited about that. I know Bruce, actually. That's his real name. He's a great guy. And I'm really excited. Cache and all those local celebritas in that movie. I'm excited to see it.
So to do a tribute to Tom Waits, do you have to torture your voice to sing like he does?
I torture it regularly anyway. You know, I got to give up those lucky strikes. Man, those things are bad, but so good. But no, not really. My voice has deepened kind of on its own, but I don't, you know, I take a little bit from Tom Waits, some vocal cues, but I try not to do a direct imitation, really. I just try to be myself. For the Tom Waits show, of course, you've got to kind of try to do some more imitation of him, but I didn't want the Tom Waits tribute to be just an imitation of Tom Waits' music. I wanted it to be the boys in the band and me to just be themselves and present the songs that way, and I think it'll come out better, more honest that way anyway.
Sammy Burroughs here in the studio with us on Juno Afternoon, talking about the Tom Waits Musical Tribute Show with yourself and friends. Saturday at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock, and Sunday at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Indeed.
Tickets available where again, Sammy?
Online to the Gold Town Nickelodeon site, brownpaperbagtickets.com, I do believe, and at the door for $20.
All right, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Oh, no, just thank you for having me. And, you know, K2 and KRNN and 102 North, right? Did I get that right? Yeah. All you guys, all your support has been wonderful. It's really good to be home. It's another thing. I've been living up in Anchorage and playing up there. And that's a lot of fun to see more of my state, but it's really fun to be home. And I just hope to see you guys all out. And I've been working really hard to bring you guys the best show possible to my hometown here in Juneau, which is what I consider my hometown. And we're all working really hard to bring you guys the best stuff possible. I'm going to keep coming back and doing it if you guys like it. So, thank you.
Sam Burroughs, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 14th of March, 2014. The birthday of Albert Einstein, born in Ulm, Germany, 1879. As a little kid, even before kindergarten, he was fascinated by a compass needle, which made a big impression on him, lasted a whole lifetime. He loved math, hated school, dropped out, taught himself calculus, went to work in the Swiss patent office in Bern, where his job was to evaluate patent applications. He found it a fairly easy job, and so it allowed him plenty of time to work on his own scientific investigations and theories. 1905, he wrote his paper on the special theory of relativity, which said that if the speed of light is constant, and if all natural laws are the same in every frame of reference, then both time and motion are relative to the observers. He published three more papers in the same year, each of which was just as revolutionary as the first, including the paper that included his famous equation E equals mc squared, E being energy, m is mass, and c stands for the velocity of light. Einstein said, "The pursuit of truth and beauty is a sphere of activity in which we are permitted to remain children all our lives." It's the birthday of Sylvia Beach, born Baltimore, 1887, the proprietor of the English language bookstore in Paris, Shakespeare and Company, who put out the first edition of James Joyce's Ulysses in 1922. It's the birthday of the humorist Max Schulman, born St. Paul, 1919, who said, "I turned early to humor as my branch of writing because life was bitter and I was not." And it's the birthday of the photographer Deanne Arbus, born Deanne Nemirov in New York City, 1923, took portraits of transvestites, dwarfs, twins, triplets, carnival performers, sometimes ordinary people with troubling expressions, who said, "I work from awkwardness. If I stand in front of something, instead of arranging it, I arrange myself." Here's a poem for today by Gail Mazur entitled "Why You Travel." You don't want the children to know how afraid you are. You want to be sure their hold on life is steady, sturdy. Were mothers and fathers always this anxious, holding the ringing receiver close to the ear? Why don't they answer? Where could they be? There's a conspiracy to protect the young so they'll be fearless. It's why you travel. It's a way of trying to let go, of lying. You don't sit in a stiff chair and worry. You keep moving. Postcards from the Alamo, the Alhambra, photos of you in Barcelona, Gaudi's Park, swirling behind you. There you are, in the garden of the master of the fishing nets, one red tree against a white wall, koi swarming over each other in the thick, demoralized pond, you fainting at the Buddhist caves, climbing with thousands on the Great Wall, wearing a straw cap, a backpack, a year before the students at Tiananmen Square, having the time of your life, blistered and smiling, the acid of your fear could eat the world. Why You Travel, a poem by Gail Mazur from Zeppo's First Wife, New and Selected Poems, published by the University of Chicago Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And also by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Theater in the Rough presents The Rivals by Mr. Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Five suitors, three ladies, and a musician bring alive this comic confection filled with live music and song. Runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 through March 30th at McPheeters Hall, with two Sunday matinees, March 23rd and 30th at 2. Tickets at all bookstores, The Jack, The Door, and at theaterintherough.org.
Time is 3:46 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juno here on the Juno Afternoon. Next guest comes just by the magic of telephone. Robert Cohen, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. We're here talking about another concert coming up, the KRNN Spotlight Concert, coming up next Wednesday at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater, a tribute to Blue Note Records.
That's right. I am at the Goldtown Nickelodeon right now, and we are doing some stage work and some sound checking in preparation for our concert, yes, which is Wednesday, next week, March 19th, and it is called a Blue Note Celebration. I've put together a sextet of musicians, and we are playing our favorite songs from the 75-year history of the legendary Blue Note record label. The tunes we've chosen span a 20-year period of that label's history, and I think many of the composers who I'm about to name will be quite familiar with our listeners. We're going to do, we have material from the great sax player and composer John Coltrane. We have music from Thelonious Monk, music from Joe Henderson, the great trumpeter Blue Mitchell, Bud Powell, the legendary Bach pianist. It's going to be a wonderful show. I'm really excited about it. We have a larger group of musicians than I usually dare to put together, including a guest trumpeter from Ketchikan, Mr. Dale Curtis, who has released albums professionally and was just playing in a club in New York not less than a month ago. So I'm really excited about the personnel, the tunes, and I think it's going to be a great, great show. And I'm very grateful to KRNN for all of the support and help to put this on.
Robert, first of all, what is a blue note?
Well, technically in music, a blue note is sort of a bent note. It's, you know, in the blues when you're trying to express that particular kind of emotion that can only be carried in music. Well, the seven notes of the major scale just weren't enough for jazz musicians. They had to bend those notes. When you hear those trumpeters or trombone players with the plungers or those guitarists sort of moving their fingers and bending those notes, they are creating blue notes. Not necessarily blue meaning sad, but from the idea of the blues, just that energy, that edginess, that essential quality of what we call the blues. That's what a blue note is, and that in 1939 was the term that Alfred Lion used when he created the Blue Note label.
What artists are familiar to our listeners who might have been broken into the popular culture by Blue Note records?
I'm sorry, Jeff, I couldn't hear you. Could you say that one more time, please?
What artists that our listeners might be familiar with have been broken by Blue Note records?
Well, nowadays I know there are a lot of Blue Note artists who are played on the current jazz shows. Some of the most famous, one of the most famous ones is Robert Glasper. I know that Kate Burkhart plays a lot of Glasper material on her shows. Actually, Kate is going to be our MC for the evening. Other artists that were broken by Blue Note, Thelonious Monk first recorded for Blue Note. Art Blakey, the fabulous drummer, first recorded on Blue Note. Clifford Brown, the trumpeter, was also made famous on the Blue Note label. The great player Joe Henderson, the guitarist Grant Green. That's just a few of the enshrined names that are go hand in hand in association with the Blue Note record label.
I imagine you had a surplus of music to choose from. How did you make your selections?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. Ultimately, I made my selections just mostly based on tunes that I love and have always loved, with also an ear toward what would be most enjoyable being presented before an audience. So it was sort of a combination of those two elements. I think, I believe that the first tune as a teenager that I ever heard, first jazz tune I ever heard was a tune from the Blue Note label, and I decided, as a tribute to that memory, that that would be one of the songs we would do this coming Wednesday. That's going to be a tune by Art Blakey with Clifford Brown. So, yeah, it's a mixture of tunes that I just love personally, think are beautiful, are innovative, and would be well worth presenting in a concert situation.
It's coming up this Wednesday, March 19th at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. A tribute to Blue Note Records with Robert Cohen and friends. It's a Karen Ann Spotlight Concert. Bobby the C, I'm going to let you get back to preparations there. Do you have anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I'm sorry, Jeff?
Do you have anything you might have forgotten to ask?
Just that the tickets are still available. You can get them at KRNN or KRNN.org. There is a Facebook page, Blue Note Celebration. I just want to say sincerely that I feel this is going to be a presentation of excellent quality, music that I love. All the musicians, the entire sextet are in love with this music. We've all been playing it all our lives, and I think our enthusiasm and appreciation of these tunes is going to shine through during the show. I hope people come.
All right, Bobby, thank you for being on the air with me today.
You bet, Jeff. Take care. Bye-bye.
Recording artist Margo Thunders. Time is 3:55. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. A reminder that you can get tickets for the Tribute to Blue Note Records concert coming up this next Wednesday at ktoo.org.
bird note. Imagine setting out alone from Block Island, off the coast of Rhode Island, on an around-the-world sailing voyage. And on the second night, finding an unexpected companion. Here's sailor Brecken Morgan.
This was the very first leg of the voyage, and I was untested. The boat was untested. I left on a bitterly cold November night, heading south on a stiff breeze, and I'm heading offshore alone for the first time in my life. The anxiety levels were very, very high. I came up on deck in the middle of a starless, windy night. Everything was pitch black, and I saw in the very faint light what I thought was a paper bag sitting on top of the folded dinghy just forward of the hatch. And as I got a little bit closer, I realized that it was a cormorant, and it stood up, let its wings out, this dark shape, and then settled back down and put its head under its wing and started to go to sleep again, I assumed. And I thought, my God, if this bird can sleep on a rocky, rolly boat in the middle of a windy, bitter, cold night, I can sleep too. And so there was this final kind of relaxation, almost like it had shown up to tell me that it's okay to sleep on a rolling boat in the middle of an ocean. I felt the presence of a companion that had something to tell me about how to live my life, and that was that I needed to sleep.
To learn more about Brecken's voyage and see his paintings of the journey, begin at birdnote.org.
Honey, I'm worried. We should do something.
I don't know. I don't know if we should get involved.
Babe, we don't want her to get hurt.
Okay, I'll call 911.
Every Alaskan has a right to be safe and free from domestic and sexual violence in our homes, relationships, and communities. You can make a difference. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast on translators K276AF at the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, you can also get us on GCI Cable Juneau and Digital Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming of KTOO programs comes to you from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Again, get your tickets for the Karen Ann Spotlight Concert at ktoo.org. Next Monday on a June afternoon, Annie Bartholomew will be your host. We'll get an update on CBJ activities with City Manager Kim Keeper, talk to Crystal Borland about health care. John Cloud will be here to highlight Juno Lyric Opera events, and we'll talk to Terry Lee Ellis about Girl Scout cookies. At Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More, next Monday on a Juno afternoon. Next Monday on KTOO, February's Mudroom event. Coming up next, All Things Considered. Weather forecast for tonight, rain showers changing to snow in the evening. Forecast for Saturday, cloudy skies with a chance of snow and a chance of rain in the afternoon, high temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Sunday, snow and rain diminishing with high temperatures around 38 degrees.
Cognizant of the pain that families who are separated have been feeling as a result of deportation.
President Obama.